door in the outer office open and close. He leapt up. It was Albert, returning from Joseph Pritchard's drug haul. His jacket was very wet, and when he stepped into Nielsen's office, he carried with him the earthy smell of rain.
"Did he burn the letter?" Nielsen said anxiously. "Did you watch him burn it? What's that you got there?"
"Pritchard's reply," said Albert. He held up a folded piece of paper.
"I said there wasn't to be a reply. I said that."
"Yes," said Albert, "and I told him, but he pinned one anyway." Nielsen eyed the document in Albert's hand.
"Did he burn my letter, at least?"
"Yes," Albert said. But then he hesitated.
"What? What?"
"Well," Albert said, "when I said he had to burn it, he laughed." Nielsen narrowed his eyes.
"Why did he laugh?"
"I don't know," said Albert, "but I thought I should tell you that he did. Maybe it doesn't matter." The muscle beneath Nielsen's eye began to pulse.
"He laughed when he read the letter? When he read the words?"
"No," said Albert. "He only laughed before, when I said he had to burn it."
"He found it amusing, did he?"
"That you told him to burn it," said Albert, nodding. He was fingering the edges of the letter in his hand. He wanted very much to ask his employer what all of this to-do was on account of, but he did not know how to ask without risking a rebuke. Aloud, he said,
"Do you want to read the reply?"
Nielsen held out his hand.
"Here," he said. "You didn't read it, did you?"
"No," Albert said, looking wounded.
"It's sealed."
"Oh, yes, so it is," said Nielsen.
He took the note from Albert's hand, turned it over, and broke apart the seal with his fingers.
"What are you waiting for?"
he said, before he unfolded the paper.
"You can go."
"Home?" said Albert, in a voice of great regret.
"Yes, home, you idiot," said Nielsen. "And you can leave the key on the desk before you do."
But the boy lingered.
"On the way back," he said, "when I passed the Prince of Wales, I saw there's a new show opening tonight, a foreign spectacle. Mr. Mannering's given away tickets for free on account of the opening, and I got one for you."
He had spoken all of this very quickly. Now he screwed up his face and looked away. Nielsen had not yet unfolded Pritchard's letter.
"What?"
he said.
"Sensations from the Orient," the boy said. "It's a gallery ticket, front and centre, the best. I asked for it special."
"You use it to yourself," Nielsen said. "You go yourself. I don't want a ticket to the theatre. Get along now."
The boy scuffed his shoe upon the boards.
"I got myself one, too," he said. "I thought, seeing as it's Saturday, and the races have been postponed."
Nielsen shook his head.
"I can't go to the theatre tonight," he said.
"Oh,"
said Albert.
"Why?"
"I'm feeling poorly."
"Just for the first act," the boy said. "There's supposed to be champagne. Champagne's good if you're feeling poorly."
"Take Henry Fuller with you."
"By the player's door, I saw a lady with a parasol.
Take Henry."
"She was Japanese,"
said Albert mournfully.
"It didn't look like grease paint. It looked like she was really Japanese. Henry Fuller's up the beach. Why won't you come?"
"I'm very ill."
"You don't look ill. You're smoking."
"I'm sure you can find someone to go along with you,"
Nielsen said with mounting irritation.
"Go down to the Star and wave their ticket around. How about that?"
Albert stared at the floorboards for a moment and worked his mouth. At length he sighed and said,
"Well, I expect I'll see you on Monday, Mr. Nielsen."
"Yes, I expect you will, Albert."
"Goodbye."
"Goodbye. You'll have to tell me all about the show, all right?"
"Maybe we can go again,"
Albert said.
"Only the tickets for tonight, but maybe we can go again."
"Yes,"
Nielsen said.
"Next week, perhaps, after I recover."
He waited until the disappointed subordinate had padded from the room and closed the door quietly behind him. Then he unfolded Pritchard's letter and stepped towards the window for a better light. "H. Can confirm. But listen, something odd happened this afternoon at Anna's. Pistols involved. Will explain in full in person. Event witnessed by A.G., courthouse clerk. Perhaps you should speak to him if you're playing the detective. Whatever Anna's mixed up in, I'm sure that A.G. knows about it. Do you trust him?" Can't say that I do. Well, the jury's still out, as the saying goes.
Destroy this letter.
J.S.P.
Thomas Balfour had returned in the late afternoon to the Palace Hotel with the intention of finding Cowell Devlin, the chaplain who had overheard his conversation with Lauderback that morning. He wished to apologise for his earlier rudeness, but also, and rather more urgently, to ask the chaplain about his connection to the vanished prospector Emery Staines. He was sure that Devlin's inquiry at the office of the West Coast Times was connected somehow to the Crosby Wells affair. Devlin was not at the Palace Hotel, however. The kitchen staff informed Balfour that he had left the dining room several hours before. He was not in his tent upon the beachfront, nor at the police camp jailhouse, nor in any of the churches. He was not in any of the stores or billiard halls, and he was not on the quay. Balfour wandered about Hokitika for several hours, dejected, and was about to give up and go home when he spied Devlin at last. The chaplain was walking down Revel Street, his hat and coat quite saturated. Walking next to him was another man, a good deal taller and larger than he. Balfour crossed the street. He was already raising his arm to flag the other down, when he recognised Devlin's companion. It was the Maori man with whom he had also spoken earlier that day, and to whom he had also been rather unforgivably rude.
"Hi there," he called. "Reverend Devlin, would you believe it? The very man I was looking to find. Hello, Ted. I'm glad to see you again, too."
Taufari did not offer a greeting. Devlin, however, smiled.
"I see that you have found out my surname," he said. "I am afraid I still do not know yours."
Balfour thrust out his hand.
"Tom Balfour," he said, beaming, and they shook hands. "Yes, I went to see Ben Lerventhal over at the Times, and we had some words about you. Matter of fact, I've been trying to track you down these past few hours to ask you something."
"Then our meeting is doubly fortuitous," said Devlin.
"It's a question about Emery Staines," Balfour said, interrupting him. "I hear you've been asking after him, you see. Wanting to know who placed that notice in the paper advertising his return. Ben told me that you'd been by. I'm wanting to know why you're asking after him, Staines, I mean, and what's your connection to the man?"
Cowell Devlin hesitated. The truth, of course, was that Emery Staines was one of the three names written upon the deed of gift that he had taken from the ash drawer of Crosby Wells Range the day after the hermit's death. He had not showed that deed to anyone.